Hawks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You want to be in touch with the show, hit me up there, and we'll discuss whatever it is that might be on your mind. Coming up on the program this morning, about a half hour from now, State Representative Shane Stringer will join us. So we'll get back into rotation here. We'll hear from Shane, and that's coming up, like I said, in about 30 minutes. Dale Jackson making his weekly appearance from WVNN. And Yellowhammer News, that's in the 10 o'clock hour. Then the 11 o'clock hour, joining us here in the Fairhope Bureau, Clyde Jones, who is the Democrat nominee in CD1, asked for time on the program, and we're happy to oblige. So please stick around for that. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. I'll start here, and I've been talking about this probably a little too much, but it's of my interest, so here we are. And this poll is being floated out there. The DCCC. So the DCCC is the Democratic Campaign Congressional Committee, which raises money and acts as the political arm of the House for the House Democrats on Capitol Hill. They have a poll out showing a tie between Shamari Figures and Rhett Marcus. And I'm kind of very skeptical of this. DCCC, especially if it's your own poll and you're going to put an outlier out there, why not just say Congressman Figures has the lead? Or whatever. But that being said, I do think it's a race. It's the one. Democrats are probably fooling themselves that they think that Doug Jones is going to be governor. However, if there's more of a winnable contest, a winnable notable contest, it would be this one. And this one, you never know in some of these precincts. You never know if to kind of get out the vote efforts, particularly if the old Joe Reed machine, which is not really in power in charge of the Democratic Party anymore, if he gets his people out, if he gets some kind of air campaign from the DCCC, targeting State Representative Marcus. And something they would do, I wouldn't put it past the DCCC, is to try to run to the right of Rhett Marcus with attack ads. So the NRSC or the NRC, the Republican version of the DCCC is out putting out, I guess, press releases and doing spots for Rhett Marcus. So AL2, that's essentially it. D versus R. That seems to be where national Democrats are really looking, thinking there's something possible there. So, like I said, you take the D and the R away from it, and it's a Montgomery candidate versus a Wiregrass candidate. More votes in Montgomery, more population there. That'll matter to some degree. There's things you're talking about in the news. The 5% turnout in the special election primary, it shouldn't surprise anybody. What we said about 5%, I thought would be a little higher just based on what we were hearing. But I think because there were just, it was kind of more of an intriguing political dynamic here in South Alabama. Maybe anecdotally it was higher, and then it was much lower in, for example, AL6, where Gary Palmer is. Not really much of a contest there, and that probably weighed down the total congressional primary turnout. I don't think it's the end of the democracy, the end of the republic. A lot of people, it's just a bad, sad state of affairs here. It's a special election, guys, and we kind of expected it. But in the competitive districts, AL1, well, not even AL1, really, based on the outcome, but AL2, turnout was okay. Not great, but it beat expectations. But the AL.coms and others just look at the bottom line data, and the knee-jerk analysis is democracy in peril. But, you know, in two of these elections, in two of these primary elections last week, it wasn't really a contest. There really wasn't a campaign necessarily. Also, in addition to all of that, let's see. Flight cameras. This is like the new data center craze. But here's a question I have for you guys. 251-343-0106. Not that I am at all pro any kind of camera, surveillance state stuff here, but is this any different than like a dash cam on a police vehicle or a law enforcement vehicle, state trooper, whatever? Now, I get it. Did they put it on private property? Did they put it on property that is not in their jurisdiction? There's one such case where there was a flight camera put up on the right-of-way, but it was the county's right-of-way, and the city of Slocum had done it, and the county commission there was, hey, you didn't really run this by us before you did this. It was outside of the city limits. Maybe it was in a police jurisdiction, I don't know, but it's still county has to say so. It's different. If they're putting them on people's property, you know, yes. And the other question, I mean, is there, take what you wanted to say about the surveillance state and just leave that there. But is there a public safety component? For example, what if there were more of these in Montgomery? What if there were more in places where there are these crime-ridden areas and they were having an impact on public safety? Does that change the discussion at all? But here's the thing. It's a very populist issue, and people don't want them, then the government needs to listen. And I think that's where, you know, that's the most important thing. We do a lot of things in the name of safety that really curb Americans' rights. These cameras, I mean, they are the hot button. Any kind of like Facebook thread in about this, and it goes on for days, they're not popular. Maybe in some places they could be popular, or maybe they could be useful. So that's my question. I mean, like, is there any value in these? And what's the difference between any other type of, say it's mobile surveillance, say it's a police car patrolling with a camera on the dash, collecting data, collecting license plates, or whatever these things do. Is that okay? I mean, we get upset about just straight up like red light cameras, and some states, they have cameras in Iowa, for example, that they monitor speed limits with a camera and a radar gun. And we'll send you a ticket. That you don't even get to talk to the police. The police don't have to pull you over. They catch you speeding. It's just sent to you. Think about that. This is what they wanted to do in some of these construction zones here in Alabama. I think they're going to. If you're caught speeding over a certain limit, say over 10 miles per hour, they'll just capture your license plate, send you a notice in the mail with a fine attached to it. And it's a civil penalty. It's not criminal. But if you don't pay it, they can take away your driver's license or whatever. But that's happening in some of the more blue places in America. I you know, to me, that's a step too far for the policymakers in the state. Well, there's one guy, and we should have him on soon. We have him on regularly, Ernie Yarborough, who is really anti-flock camera. And he thinks that the legislature is going to try to do something to curb the use of them. He may introduce a bill or two, but I'm going to venture a guess here that there's probably a lot of pro-surveillance types on the Republican side in the Alabama legislature who are gonna be for these. They won't, you know, go and out on the stump and talk about the virtues of this kind of surveillance, but they will give you a wink and a nod to let you know they're for them. Maybe a lot of them are, I guess, former police chiefs or officials, state troopers, whatever. They were sort of come up in the law enforcement ranks, and they look at this as just the technology, as a useful tool of the technology to curb crime and keep you safe. So, I will Representative Yarborough have any say here? Will he be able to move the needle on this? He'll have a lot of support. But does this become an issue that people beyond a certain subset of the political watchers, they care about? Is it like vaccines and vaccine mandates? The bar is pretty high. I mean, the gas tax is a perfect example here. And everybody was against the gas tax in 2019. Then when the next election rolled around in 22, people ran on it. No one really won on that. So this, I mean, it's gotta meet a certain standard here to get your elected representation in Montgomery to really care here. But that's one of the biggest things that people are talking about right now in Alabama politics is the flock cameras. It's sort of put data centers and solar farms in the back seat. Once you get text line, we'll get your text in just a moment. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. My son, it's all left up to you.
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times. Somebody take me home.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Shane Stringer up in the next segment, so stick around for that. Just put them in high crime areas. Nobody would argue that from Derek. Of course, boomers live scared. Fox News is has them hiding under their blankets and dropping off something. Oh, boy. Well, Derek, I eagerly anticipate whatever that might be. I'll see here. Jeff, your buddy from Trustable is a big proponent of the cameras, and he has pushed it on your show. Oh, is this when he filled in? Well, we'll see. DEI texture is Pensacola Blue City. I think it has some blue qualities. I think it's red in national politics and elections, but it's such a transient population with the military and the tourist economy that maybe at the you know, bottom level, at the lower level of government, municipal government, it probably, most municipalities are a little, at least moderate, if not blue, DEI texture. We don't have partisan elections in our municipal elections in Alabama. You don't run as a Democrat or Republican. I think if you did, imagine what city government, I mean, the policy discussions would totally change. Fire Dog, you've invited surveillance state into your home. I know there's a difference between you controlling it versus someone else. I guarantee you, if there's a crime in my neighborhood, it's going to be caught on 78 Ring cameras. I'm not sure what expectation of privacy you have when you're in a public place. Well, and that I mean, there's case law on this. The cameras, though, I think here, Fire Dog, it's the collection of the data and storing it that has people a little perturbed. Let's continue on here. Squirrel Vereen. We've been happy to see how body cameras destroyed the narrative on abusive police, yet now the dorks with their Benjamin Franklin quote copying are about a specific type of camera. In Mobile last year, everyone was upset to learn that park cameras didn't work to catch shooters, yet now they are fussing over the mayor implementing cameras that will be on tethered drones. There's a contradiction there. Jason, morning, Jeff. Can we ask Mr. Stringer if he'll be taking a position with the Mobile County Sheriff's Department in the next few months? And if so, will that impact his current role? Jason, you know that he was fired by the sheriff, the late Sam Cochran. He already had at one point while he was serving in the legislature, he was an employee of the Mobile County Sheriff's Office. I don't think that necessarily mattered. But I think it I don't think it impacted his job at the time. Why would it impact it if he were to get hired again? Leo referenced flock cameras. It saves just one life. Well, yeah, so this is interesting. You are pro flock camera? Because sometimes you're, besides stick to the issues, no sports ball, you're consistently more conservative of the textures. And then one more text here. I hope Tater Harris, John Wall, and Stillwell will take their signs down on the expressway to other places around Foley. They have until there's a general election still. So if they are the Republican nominee, now Sidwell's, I guess, is who you meant by Stillwell. Sidwell isn't, but I think, you know, John Wall still has an election on November 3rd. That's why you see some of these signs still up. The election cycle's not over. There's still an election, general election, on November 3rd. If that helps any. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We will be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Counting flowers on the wall.
Chips and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Monday morning. Still to come on the program about an hour from now, Dale Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Clyde Jones, he is the Democrat running in the 1st Congressional District. It's Jerry Carl, November 3rd. So please stick around for that. Joining us now on the line, he is one of our regulars on Mondays, but been a little while, but because I was out, and we're back together again. But State Representative Shane Stringer is with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thank you for making time for us. Let me start this. It's the hot button right now. You're in law enforcement, but flock cameras. What's your take on those?
Very complicated. I think that there's a lot of issues with it, and I think we need to do some deep dive into it and to see, you know, what we're going to do. But, you know, I think there's some good that comes from it. You know, I'm sure people that have missing loved ones or something, it helps recover it, probably love it, think it's the best thing ever. Those that have probably been mistakenly identified, stopped, held at gunpoint, or held for hours by a false alarm is probably totally against it. But it's here. I think we're going to have to address it and try to come up with, if it's going to be here, we're going to have to put some checks and balances in place. You know, we've seen in different areas of the country, and even right here in Alabama, where officers have been identified as abusing it and using it wrongly. There needs to be some laws in place to address that, some strict laws, if we're going to allow it to continue. But even then, there's still just a lot of issues with it, you know, from private people being the investors and having access to this information. It is probably one of the deepest issues that I think we need to address in our state, if not the country right now.
Yeah. So, you know, some of your colleagues have talked about it publicly. It's just maybe it's a matter of putting some guardrails in place to prevent some abuses.
Yeah, probably so. Some of that, at least at the bare minimum. But, you know, I'm not a big into this type of stuff. You know, even being in law enforcement, I have been against these traffic cameras that mail you a ticket for running a red light, you know. And of course, yes, it will probably reduce wrecks at some of these intersections, but a lot of these situations turn into revenue generators for the cities, and that's where, you know, they do it for. And even in this, if you go back and look at a lot of the investors that are involved in the flock system, you know, you'll see it is about the money. It's a money generating system. So I think there's a lot that we need to look at. And I think there's probably a lot that's going to have to be done if they're allowed to stay. But if not, then, you know, we need to figure out what to do with them.
Is this technology any different than what you would have on a typical police car, on a state trooper vehicle or anything? Because I guess the question here is just it's stationary. Like, what's the distinction here? Is this something you would have like on a dash camera?
There are cop cars that are equipped with LPR, license plate readers, that can read them as they go by, and it will alert the officer in the car through the computer if it gets a hit that one of them are stolen or something involved with a wanted person or something. But even then, you still have to catch the vehicle and try to gather more information to determine if it's accurate before making a stop or doing something like that. What we have seen with the flock cameras across the country is law enforcement is taking it as it's an absolute, and they're not doing further checks or whatever. They're stopping cars, holding people at gunpoint with families and kids in the car. They're, you know, they're holding people on the side of the road for an hour or two while they try to resolve whatever the miscommunication is through the system. So I think some of that stuff's got to, you know, we've got to work on that. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, technology is changing every day. I mean, I'm sure we're being monitored through our phones and smart TVs and smart refrigerators and everything else. So I'm not sure where we go in the future with all of this, but I definitely think we've got to slow roll it and make sure that we're not just giving up all of our freedoms and liberties for the sense of safety and security.
Joined by State Representative Shade Stringer here on the program. Well, and you know, how the one thing that was kind of an issue there toward the end of last session, it was these cameras in these construction areas, right, that would, I guess, would just catch speeders. And the idea there was it would just mail a ticket and a penalty just as if you were getting a speeding ticket. I mean, this seems to be a trend in law enforcement with this, as we kind of, you know, advance ahead in our technological age, just more and more of this is becoming something, and I'm not quite sure the public's keeping up with it.
Yeah, they better. You know, it's a very important issue when you start looking at giving up the Fourth Amendment or stuff like that through these camera systems. And, you know, I was totally opposed to that bill, too. I just do not believe that we should be putting cameras up everywhere and mailing everybody tickets. There's multiple issues and problems with it. One, you've got private companies are gaining revenue from this. They're getting part of the ticket money that comes to them. And there's just a lot of issues that with these systems, these traffic cameras. And, you know, if we're not careful, it's a slippery slope. We could have them everywhere we go. And I think that I kind of like my freedoms and liberties, and I don't, you know, I don't want us to take that for granted, and I want us to stand up for what's right and stand up for our Constitution.
Well, you know, and you look at the way things are going in some of our cities in Alabama. I mean, that to me, maybe it's a case by case basis. Would these cameras really? Well, I guess that's just a question in general. When you start putting these cameras up in Birmingham and Montgomery, does that make those cities safer? Would that help? Is that a place where, like, this technology maybe would be appropriate?
Well, I think there's a place for this type of technology, but I think there needs to be some checks and balances in place. You know, there has to be warrants to get a wiretap on, you know, just say a cartel organization to track them and catch them. There should be a warrant process for maybe installing these cameras in certain areas or whatever. Right now, we're just installing them across the country, everywhere, anywhere and everywhere. We're tracking and maintaining the movement of normal, everyday, law-abiding citizens. And I guess if that's never used, then whatever, but at any point somebody decides to misuse this and gather that information for whatever purpose, then we've got problems. And so I think we really need to stay on top of this, and we really need to do a deep dive. I even seen where there was a bill or either a correction in Los Angeles where they're, you know, rescinding their contract of Flock cameras for now. So that tells you a lot, you know, if they're doing it. So we're going to have to look at it and try to make some determination.
Well, and it's just
how to use them.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of this is like the new data center. This is a new touchy subject. And, you know, I don't know where the entirety of the public is, but I know there's a very vocal group of people who are very, very adamant about these things not being a part of their, you know, their community.
Yeah, there has to be checks and balances in everything we do in life. And I think that you know, we have got to get a hold of this and get our mind wrapped around it. You know, it's definitely become one of the hot topic issues in the whole country. There's not a news station that you turn on that don't have a story on it. So I think you're going to see potentially even something come out of the either federal legislation or some rules and regulations pertaining to it. But something needs to be done at a minimum, checks and balances to make sure it's not being used and abused. But even at that, when you've got private investors that own these companies and are gathering law enforcement information and, you know, could potentially be selling it or whatever they're doing with it, they're doing something with it. So I think we need to know all of that. But there again, that goes right back to how problematic these type of devices are.
Yeah, that's the perverse incentive here. So, for example, if municipality XYZ puts these things in, and maybe they, I guess, could theoretically, they worked out a deal with the manufacturer, then the manufacturer, if they're sending out speeding tickets or whatever kind of moving vehicle violation, right, could perceivably get a cut of that, and it creates this perverse financial incentive for policing or over policing or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, we've looked at everything. I use this example. We have around 30 deaths a year on I-65. We could reduce that by 50% or more by reducing the speed limit from 65 down to about 30. But who wants to run 30 from Mobile to Huntsville or from Huntsville to Mobile? How much are we willing to give up for that extra little bit of security of wrecks on 65? And that's the philosophy I try to use when I talk to people about these issues.
But you think, because, I mean, one of your colleagues, Ernie Arborough, is just, he's ready to ban them all together. But I kind of wonder if he may be the outlier here, but there are probably some of your colleagues who think this is, you know, just efficient, cost-effective way to take some of the you know, duties off the backs of some law enforcement around their districts.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think that we can do away with law enforcement, and that's where I stand with it. You know, if I'm out here speeding and law enforcement stops me, write me a ticket, let me, you know, move on or whatever, but I shouldn't be getting a ticket in the mail every time I'm doing 4 miles an hour over, you know, on Celeste Road in my district or somewhere else. I think there's better ways to handle this. You know, we're not communists yet, and I hope we can keep it from happening. So I'm dead set on supporting my constituents and being there for them.
Joined by Shane Stringer here on the program. Well, last question, we'll get you out of here on this. The toll authority is okayed the governor's plan. It looks like there's going to be the toll regime that has been floated out there, and $8 if you're, you know, a baseline toll. There's other more, I guess, cheaper means of paying in and getting across it. But the Mobile Bay Bridge, it looks like it's proceeding forward. How you feel about it?
Yeah, I've been keeping up with it. Looks like it's, you know, fast tracking and headed in the right direction. Do we need it? Absolutely. I think it's a necessity. We've got to have it, but I'm totally against the tolling. I think that there's other ways to do this. We've accomplished it in other areas of the state and the country. And but, you know, if it's going to be that, the encouraging thing is the fact that the, you know, the Bankhead Tunnel had a toll at one time. That was removed. We had the toll bridge going into Orange Beach. That was eventually removed. So it is hope that, you know, that that can be removed at some point. So hopefully, if it's going to be that, then it hopefully we can be encouraged that it will be removed at some point in history.
Yeah, because that's, you know, the discussion that this is meant to finance the bridge. Well, at what point does this get paid off? Does the and you know, that there's got to be something there that would take the toll away. Now, you mentioned it, to their credit, the state took the toll. They bought the Orange Beach Bridge and took it off. I guess a long time ago, they took the toll off of the Bankhead Tunnel. So, you know, we don't really know, though, like when that day will come. You know, we may not be on this earth, Representative, but this seems to me like it'd be appropriate to have some kind of, you know, formality or something saying this is when the toll goes away.
Yeah, I would like that. You know, we looked at that when we did the potential for the private partnerships in our prison systems. And that was one of the concerns that the legislators had, is we never could get like a buyout at the end of the contract. And basically, once we figured everything up, we were going to be paying the same amount as if we built them ourselves. But at the end, we would have to purchase the prisons from a private company, and that was very concerning, not to know what that would look like in, at the end of this this partnership. So, yeah, that's going to be a big concern. I don't know what we're going to do. Hopefully, you know, we have good people in office that will do away with it quick as they can, and we can move on to some bigger and better project.
Representative, we always appreciate your time. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for hopping on this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Walls of history are cold and steel. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Billy, Jeff, the USS Leak has been deployed for almost 9 months with no shore leave. There have been reports of food shortages, plumbing problems, and mental health concerns, even reports of sailors trying to jump overboard. Troubles asked by reporters. I know the talking point because, Billy, it's been on CNN, MS Now nonstop. But Trump was asked by reporters Friday whether he had gone on too long. He says, not nearly long enough. What says you? This just looks to me like a smear campaign against Trump by the Pentagon, some within the Pentagon. I'm not saying I'm okay with deteriorating conditions on our naval ships abroad at all, but it's a little... Billy, the way you could tell is it's just how much time and the talking points and how they seem to be in unison. Like suddenly Jake Tapper and, I don't know, Ari Melber are like reading from the same script on USS Abraham Lincoln. Which just it kind of strikes me, you know, like, yeah, well, what's going on here? It feels AstroTurf. It feels like, okay, we got something on this guy. We don't like Beathead Seth. Maybe this is how we get him out of the way. At the expense of one very specific incident on a aircraft carrier in the Middle East. That's what it strikes me as, Billy. I know you're not going to agree with that, and but when you see the DC game and you know it, and you know that, you know, it could be anything. It could be a defense contractor wanting the contract to upgrade this aircraft carrier to renovate it or whatever. It could be in any number of those things that are going on here. And that's what, you know, this was something Trump ran on, was updating, upgrading the military and making it modern. And then like the Trump comment, not nearly long enough. I don't get the context there, but the tale to me is just how the media pounced on it. Like, you know, they're not even willing to give Trump the benefit of the doubt here, that maybe he didn't mean it that way, or maybe it was something he misunderstood the question, or I don't know. That it means one thing, that and therefore Trump is bad. So this is always going to be the issue right here with this, Billy, is these guys have lost a lot of their credibility when you see these news reports about any of this. And it's very suspect sometimes. And until they can ever repair that image, that perception, I'm just going to look at it as this is just political opportunism from somebody in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.